All right, we're live.
Awesome.
So, thank you.
We're not live, are we?
Well, not yet. we're
live to recording. We're hot.
Yeah. We got hot mics here. So, we're sitting in one of the lobbies of the Westin Bayshore Hotel. Beautiful setting, great view. A bit of background noise that just, you know, if you're wondering what the noise is, that's what it is. I'm sitting down here with Mike Allen, a leading jazz musician in Canada and a bit of a legend in the Vancouver scene, well known as a tenor saxophonist, and I've heard rumors that you might play a couple other instruments as well.
I play piano as well.
And do you perform on the piano?
I have. I had a steady gig at O'Doul's playing solo piano for several years and did some gigs in groups as well, trios and quartets and things like that, but mainly I'm known as a saxophone player.
I know a lot of, you know, serious musicians, especially jazz musicians, learn how to play the piano maybe just because of trying to understand theory and
Yeah, some people use it to learn theory and then they become pretty good at comping and, you know, quite competent at accompanying people, but maybe not strong soloists or sort of artistic on the piano. It more is a functional role that they can play on the piano. But for me, it's always been, it was my first instrument. It's always been an instrument that I've gone to for emotional healing, I guess, some kind of emotional effect. And right from when I started playing, or very shortly after I started playing, I found it was a respite playing the piano for me. So it's always been that way. I used it for composition. I've used it for teaching. I've used it for learning, you know, teaching myself about harmony. And but then it graduated for me because I had all this classical technique already learned. I was working on grade 10 piano, which is reasonably challenging music. I took a long break when I started playing the saxophone. I took maybe 6 or 7 years off playing the piano from the ages of 13 to 20, and then I went back to it around 20 when I was studying at McGill. And I'd lost some of the technique that I'd had when I was a kid, which was kind of frustrating, but at the same time, a lot of the facility came back. In fact, some of the facility I noticed was more natural on piano than it is was on the saxophone. And for example, I could, if I sing a tune, if I'm sitting at the piano bench and I'm at the piano and I sing a melody, my right hand will just follow the contour of that melody. I can just kind of play it, even if I don't know what the notes are. So my brain kind of knows the geometry of the piano, and it can kind of come into sync with my voice. So that was actually, when I realized that told me that I had something artistic that I could do with the piano, and it could be more than just a functional tool for me.
That's very cool. We've got two more days of the Vancouver International Jazz Festival. You've been the host at the official Jazz Jam four nights, I think, over the last little while.
I did one other gig at a little club on Commercial Drive called Tangent Cafe on one of the off nights, but I've been focused on just being... It takes a lot of energy to be present, to want to be at a jam session and to listen to whatever comes off the stage and to be positive about it. So I've found that the more music I see, that the more I get diminishing returns on that need to be really present at the jam session, that my job really is to enjoy other people's music, other people's playing, and it doesn't matter what level they're at. So if I go and see any number of top level musicians, my whole sense of where the music should be gets elevated and elevated and elevated, and then it's really hard for me to be at the jam session and be super positive about whatever happens. And sometimes it's quite good what comes off the stage at a jam session. Sometimes it's not that good, but it's still possible to be positive about it when it's not that good, if I'm in the right headspace. And so that's why I need to avoid music as much as possible during the jazz festival if I'm going to do a good job with the jam session. It's kind of one of the prices you have to pay for that.
That's very interesting, in that the festival increases the amount of jazz music that's going on in the city, but it also spreads the spectrum from the very greatest in the world to anybody else that might be wanting to come out to a jazz jam. So that's an interesting perspective of having to prepare yourself to host a jazz jam. And I think, you know, I've been out and I've seen some of the headliners, but to me the most exciting thing is the jazz jam.
Well, there's a lack of bullshit about the jam session that there just has to be in the rest of the festival, because when you're being paid to play, and in some cases being paid a lot to play, there's a lot of pressure to bring it. There's no pressure at a jam session to bring it, really. Only the pressure you put on yourself. With that pressure, I think the headliners and some of the sort of middle sort of tier musicians that come to a jazz festival, it affects the performance a little bit. It affects the enjoyment of the performance. It affects the kind of staging of the performance, right? You know, if you're going to be bringing in somebody and paying them whatever amount of money that a Stanley Clark band gets paid, you're not going to put them in a little club and make it acoustic. You're going to put them on a big stage. You're going to get all their sounds amplified by somebody, sometimes somebody who doesn't even know the music. And often they do a good job. Sometimes, you know, there's a lot of mitigating factors to the sound of the music that you hear, whether it's the room, whether it's the sound gear, whether it's the musicians themselves not being comfortable with the sound. But you come to the jam session, and people walk up on stage with their instrument, they just play. And if you could hear some of the great players, if there were more of these top-level players coming out to the jam session and you heard them in that context, I think it would really help to appreciate what they do better, and it would also demystify them somewhat. I'll give you an example. When I was living in Montreal, I used to play at the festival every year from the time that I was sort of considered to be a professional saxophone player. I think I played 7 to 10 years in a row at the festival, lots of gigs. But one year I went to the jam session. I was standing on stage. It was a Steve Amaro trio, and Steve Holley was playing in bass in that trio. He was at the jam session with me these past 2 weeks. And on stage walked Grover Washington Jr. So, and then Seamus Blake came up. So here was Grover, there was Seamus, and there was me. And there were three tenor saxophones and rhythm section. We played a tune, and, you know, to be honest, Seamus just blew everybody away. He was just so good. We were just standing there in awe of his playing, right? And Grover, just like me, we were both like kids watching him play. He's so good, you know? And then, you know, it just, I think for everybody, they can kind of go, oh, he's famous, but he can appreciate how good someone like Seamus was. I could appreciate it for sure, but I didn't have that impediment of being famous, you know, to get in the way of the appreciation. But I think it was really, really impactful for people in the audience to see Grover Washington really digging on Seamus's playing and being almost humble, almost self-effacing when it came to his solo. Sort of like, no, I know I'm not cutting it now with you guys on stage with me. But, you know, so that's the kind of thing that the jam session can provide, that perspective, that the realism of what's really of what's happening.
Well, that's really cool. And does that help you to appreciate the importance of the role you play as the host of the jazz jam?
Yeah, it does a lot. That to me is my role, is to keep it real, to make sure that it doesn't turn into a sort of an ass-kissing kind of self-congratulatory, or this is the kind of thing that would make it a real turnoff for me right away. If I had to schmooze and I had to be an advocate for the famous people that were coming, I just try to treat everybody the same, give everybody an opportunity to play, you know, and I think people appreciate that. Like, I think people really, some people don't understand where they fit in the echelon of how good and what other people want to hear in the audience. Like, some people will think, oh, I should go up and play that now that, you know, XYZ has just played, some famous person is just going to, they just might not be that self-aware, but so my job is to say, okay, come on up, we'll try to make you sound good, but you know, I have to manage all these different factors. Like, okay, is the audience going to appreciate this? Are they all going to leave if I have a string of sort of not so great players playing you know, are the people that are there to sit in, the famous people, are they going to kind of say, oh, this isn't a very good situation for me if we have a number of weaker ensembles come up while they're sitting there waiting to play? So it's a bit of management, but you know, if we try to make everybody sound good and we try to give an opportunity to as many people as we possibly can, then everyone basically leaves happy. You know, there's only been a couple of times in the last, I've been doing this for about 13 years, there's only a couple of times that I've ever had any sort of negative feedback from people. Or,
well, it's a good track record.
Pretty good, yeah.
Taking a step back, how would you assess your music career right now? Are you enjoying your music, and what about it might you be enjoying today?
Well, my career has just taken a bit of a turn. 5 years ago, I took over as the jazz director at Western Washington University from the previous director there, Chuck Israels, a great bassist. So when I took over that position, asked what I needed in order to make it successful, and I said I needed to have my band alongside. And this is very much in keeping with all this jam session work. I always hired my band to be with me because I knew I could count on those particular musicians to give their best to the people that were, you know, we were working with in the jam sessions. So I knew it would work as a teaching forum as well. And it did work really well, and we built up the program. I was the main person there. I was there 2 days a week, for two full days, and the other guys in the band kind of dropped in once a week or once every 2 weeks. And we would teach together when they were there, and we would perform together in Bellingham and elsewhere, and raise the profile of the program, you know, spread the passion for the music with the students and in the community. And it worked great. And then I just found out that I wasn't hired back. So this year they decided to go with somebody else who's more of a you know, a career educator rather than a performing artist, which is what I consider myself. You know, I've always described what I am as a career musician. I usually put performer, composer, educator. I put educator third because I consider myself to be a performer and composer before an educator. And so I guess it makes some sense that if they wanted to have somebody who was going to be a career educator and be part of that group of educators that is at the school, that they would want somebody that fit in with them and could see things the same way they see things. So that really changed things a lot because I actually wanted to go back. I wanted to continue building the program and continue hiring my group in that way to as a model for how to play music and how to be a musician. And that's what was successful about it. Moving forward, now I'm at a precipice where I'm either could look for another educational job and I could continue to be a professor and perform on the side, or I can move back into what I was doing before I did that, which is performing mainly and doing education somewhat on the side. I think because of the situation I'm in my life, being 50 years old and having certain connections in the musical world and having certain connections in the educational world, I can probably make a go of it again. It gets harder every year to make a go of it being a performer. And the world gets more expensive. Gigs don't pay anymore. There's more and more good players out there graduating all the time and developing. So you're splitting an ever-decreasing pie amongst more people. But life is probably going to allow me to do that, which is great. And I'm really excited to be focusing again on performing and composing and touring and recording and doing all those things that I did for all those years before I started teaching at Western.